the National Public Health Emergency Team will meet today amid widespread expectations that it will recommend the easing of COVID-19 restrictions. The latest figures indicate that the number of new infections continues to fall. Last night, there were 881 people with COVID in the country's hospitals, about 100 fewer than a week ago. Meanwhile, frontline healthcare workers are to get a €1,000 bonus. There's to be an extra bank holiday and a national day of commemoration. Joining us in studio this morning is the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. Taoiseach, good morning.
Good morning.
What people need now is information. When are the current restrictions, like bars and restaurants closing at 8 o'clock, when are those restrictions likely to come to an end?
Well, I think you will appreciate that NPHET are meeting today. The government will meet tomorrow. And then after that government meeting, I intend to give a clear and comprehensive statement about what lies ahead, both in the short term and in the medium term. The situation is positive. We have come through Omicron better than we might have expected prior to Christmas. The combination of the booster campaign and vaccination, allied to the fact that with the fact that the Omicron does not seem to be as virulent as Delta and previous waves, has meant that the impact on people in terms of severe illness and death and ICUs has been much less. So therefore, I think people can be positive. We can be positive. I want to thank the people of Ireland for the manner in which they've adapted through the Delta wave and through the Omicron wave to enable us to manage and control its impact on people's lives and on our hospital services. So I think we are entering into a new phase. I hope to be in a position tomorrow evening to give a comprehensive, clear position in terms of the lifting of restrictions and also how we intend now to live with COVID over the next while, because COVID isn't going away, but we are in definitely into a newer phase of it.
Right. Is change likely to happen next week then?
Very possibly, yes. And again, the original restrictions were there till the end of the month. We may not go before that. And again, I do want to allow NPHET meet today and so on. But yes, I think we can look forward to an earlier lifting of restrictions than we might have anticipated.
I take your point about NPHET meeting, but are measures on social distancing, are they likely to change? Do you want them to change?
No, well, there are some areas that we want to keep because, as I've said, COVID hasn't gone away. There could be another chapter in COVID and we need to be very vigilant and mindful of that. And so therefore, mask wearing, for example, will be an important, feature that we should retain.
Because you'll know that in England from next week, people will no longer be required to wear face masks anywhere, and they'll no longer be required to work from home. How far away is that day here?
That's some day away yet for you. I personally, and it's our view, and I think that would be shared by public health advice, that we should retain what we have at the moment in terms of the regulations and in terms of guidelines, in terms of the wearing of masks. We still have a childhood vaccination program that's underway. The booster campaign will now, in all likelihood, go out to April because of the fact that so many people got Omicron that haven't been in a position to get the booster. And I have to say, the booster has been the best weapon we've had against Omicron. And and what's coming across from the clinicians in the hospitals is that it's the unboosted and the unvaccinated who are suffering the most in terms of severe illness.
And just on that question of social distancing, because it's an issue that matters a great deal, in particular to many businesses, is there likely to be change
there
in the short term?
That's again, the public health perspective now is that there has to be a rationale for measures. Omicron has been so transmissible that the key issue for us in the context of Omicron has been prevention of severe illness. So it's through that prism that we look at issues like social distancing, and we await the public advice on that.
Figures tweeted by Brian McCrath of the Vaccine Task Force yesterday showed that the booster uptake among younger people is far lower than among older age groups. Does that concern you?
It does. Now, there may be a number of factors there. One, it may be that quite a number have got COVID and are not eligible for the
But there's a huge
vaccine.
Difference between but, the age groups.
And the second factor I'm worrying is that people sense that Omicron, they know now Omicron hasn't been as impactful, and are people saying to themselves, I don't need the booster. I would have to say to them, you do need the booster. I would urge you to go and get the booster. It has been, I would say, in most people in the medical area would say it's been a key factor in preventing severe illness over Christmas, and to prevent the worst impacts of COVID and Omicron. So it is a concern. It is a concern, and in the midst of all the noise about restrictions and lifting and so on, sometimes the message around vaccination can get lost. So there will be a doubling down of the campaign on vaccination, because if you think back over the last 12 months, who would have said that we would have been tolerating 20,000 cases a day and not be in level 5? The fact that we are tolerating such high levels of disease is a testament to the efficacy of the vaccines.
Public healthcare workers are to get a €1,000 bonus. When will they receive their money?
That has to be worked out, but as soon as we possibly can through the various systems, and the Minister for Public Expenditure, Michael McGrath, and the Minister for Health will work that out with the HSE in particular.
And has the list of those to receive this payment, has it now been finalised?
More or less, but there is a panel to be established, because it's a complex enough area in terms of categories of workers and so forth. I think the key principle was to recognise, first of all, through the bank holiday, all of the people of this country, in terms of remembering those who've lost their lives, and many families will want to, I think nationally we need to have a day of remembrance, and over that period we will, and it'll be on the 20th of March this year, and also then to recognise everybody who've played their part, but in particular then those who are in high risk, and particularly in the health service, and we've all seen it, particularly through the earlier waves.
So you might add some names, some categories to that
list. There will be a panel created to try and look at maybe categories that there could be issues around, but the key principle is that there is some working through to be done yet in relation to some areas.
Because there are a number of people being mentioned this morning. In particular, I'm thinking of people like nurses and receptionists in GP practices. I mean, they were on the front line too.
Yes, so there are areas like that. I mean, it's a very difficult area.
Should they be included?
But I think we're going to look at certain categories, basically people who were in that front line, who were engaging with the public and with the patients in particular, and people coming forward in the medical arena and in the health arena. There was clearly a higher risk within the health arena. Without the people in the front line in our health services, we couldn't have come through COVID. And they have to be the priority.
Okay,
and
so you're not ruling those people out at the moment?
Well, as I say, there will be a panel there. I'm not ruling them out at this stage. No.
And others like pharmacists, bus drivers, Gardaí, supermarket workers?
The priority and the primary concern has been the healthcare workers. We had to make some demarcation lines to give true recognition to those in the front line every day throughout the pandemic, and dealing with very severe cases of and dealing with a lot of trauma. I can remember the earlier RTE programmes that dealt with the first wave and the second wave of what it was like to work in an intensive care unit. And many nurses and doctors spoke about the trauma on them and the incredible impact. And time maybe distanced that experience, but it doesn't for me. And I think we do need to keep that sense of prioritisation of those who were in those very traumatic and difficult situations.
We heard earlier on the programme from a representative of those who work with people with disabilities. They were also on the front line. Should they be included?
Well, there are a range of categories and involved in an area like disabilities, for example, and from residential, you then have daycare, in a lot of daycare weren't fully open throughout and so on. So that panel that I've referenced earlier will look at particular categories of workers in the context of this scheme.
You mentioned a few moments ago that there's to be a national commemoration event in March, on the 20th of March. Will there be an inquiry into how the country has handled the pandemic?
There will. I would prefer to call it an evaluation of how the country managed COVID-19. I think we do have to learn lessons. Principally learn lessons for the future, that other pandemics could happen. This pandemic isn't over, by the way. I just have to stress that point, because
this is it. But as everybody has been pointing out, you know, COVID isn't going away, but yes, we may be coming towards the end of one phase of it.
Yes, exactly. But I do think we need to learn lessons is the basic point. And I think why? Because we want people to be, we want to be in a better, stronger position if another pandemic arrives or similar type emergencies arise.
And will that inquiry or evaluation or whatever you want to call it, will it be carried out in public?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I think, see, up to now, I wanted to keep people at the front line and not taken out of the front line to be inside in some room for hours a day going through, you know, presentations, and that's a whole area. I also want to make sure that the spirit of such an evaluation should be the right one. I don't want people during the next pandemic to be looking over their shoulders saying there's an inquiry coming and I might, you know, and take a conservative approach. Mistakes get made in the middle of a pandemic and will be made, but we need people who are decisive and who make decisions and who do it in the best public interest. And I would be satisfied that that has been the spirit that has informed the key people who've contributed across the board in hospitals and nationally and so on throughout this pandemic. Mm, so that's my sense of it. And having been a former Minister for Health in terms of pandemic preparedness and so on, and in public life, sometimes people can be looking over their shoulder too much in time of crisis, when what you need actually is people who go for it and make decisions in the best interests of the public.
You do accept, though, that there are people listening this morning who have questions they want answered. I'm thinking in particular of people like those who lost a loved one in a nursing home.
Absolutely, I do. I accept that fully. And that's why I said there should be, and there has to be, an inquiry and an evaluation of this that takes all aspects of our experience throughout the pandemic. And in particular, in terms of where there has been loss of life as a result of the pandemic. But also to learn lessons, particularly in terms of our health service. I think in terms of increasing the capacity of our health service, we had 800 extra beds last year. We want to continue that increase in capacity, both in terms of acute beds, but also in terms of ICU, but also in terms of community medicine, in terms of primary care and so forth. And I think I would like to think that much of what has happened during the pandemic, some of the reforms could be embedded into the health service into the future in terms of its capacity, but also in terms of its efficiency and reforms.
Just as you mentioned embedding reforms, Leaving Cert students have been asking that this year's exam be run on a hybrid basis. They say that their education has been so badly disrupted over the past couple of years that they shouldn't be asked to sit the old style Leaving Cert. Do they have a point?
It has been very challenging for them, but there have already been adjustments made to this year's Leaving Certificate, which were made last August, both as a result of the disruptions that this cohort of students this year would have experienced in fifth year and so forth, but also were likely to face. Now, we're not at level five where we were last year. The hybrid model does present challenges. My understanding is about a third of this cohort would not have junior certificate results. So the whole data issue would be problematic, to say the least.
Mm. It sounds as though you prefer the standard Leaving Cert.
No, I think we need to have an open debate about it, and we need to be transparent in terms of what the issues potentially could be. And also, if you look at there's that issue, there's also the grade inflation, the fact that we have squeezed third level in the last 2 years for thousands of additional places. The capacity to do that this year is more challenging, and therefore the grade inflation could, at the other end of this journey, have very severe stress and impacts on students also. But the Minister is meeting with everybody today through the steering, the examination steering advisory group, which involves parents and students and teachers and the NCCA and the State Examination Commission, and they will discuss this in greater depth.
And when then will the students get a decision?
Well, within the next short while, I think there is an understanding that we need clarity and certainty as early as we possibly can.
Have you spoken to Simon Coveney about the champagne drinking in his department in June 2020?
I did. I spoke to him some time back in relation to that, the week before last. And that was wrong, what happened in relation to that event. It was a lapse of judgment without question. It seems to me, from what I've gathered, that they were there that evening because of the United Nations Security Council vote. They didn't expect that Ireland would be elected on the first count, so they were there to work the phones in the event of we trying to get elected on the second count. And that's why workers were there that evening. They have accepted that it was wrong and they have apologised. I think balance and proportionality has to apply. The Secretary General is producing a report for the Minister. The Minister is willing to go before the Oireachtas Committee on Foreign Affairs in relation to the issue.
Should he have done more at the time, though? I mean, he saw the photo of, what was it, about 20 officials, none of whom were wearing masks or adhering to social distancing.
Yes, but at the time, I mean, I can't recall at the time being aware of it myself, but a lot of people apparently were. And no one kind of said anything in 18 months, it seems to me, until more recently.
Do you wish
times.
That they had made you aware of it?
Well, I wasn't in government at the time, and there was a lot going on. We were preparing for government, as was the minister, to be fair, at the time. There was a lot of negotiations. It was coming to the wire in terms of the formation of the government and the talks. What strikes me is that the people involved, one gets a real sense it was impromptu and not organised. By the workers or anything like that. It was like in the context of the time, it was wrong. It was coming towards the end of that period.
And can you understand why it upsets so many
people? Yes, I do,
who couldn't hold proper funerals, who weren't there for the birth of a child. The list goes on and on.
It does. And I do understand that. And it was wrong. And I think they've come very clean, very quickly, and said, yes, it was wrong and we shouldn't have done it. And they've apologised for
that. Well, they haven't really, have they? Because as you point out, it happened 18 months ago.
No, but they have apologised. And the then Secretary General has apologised. There's no inclination at all not to be very, not just apologetic, but there's no refusal to accept that this was the wrong thing to do.
Is that the end of the matter then, as far as you're concerned?
Well, within the public service, there's disciplinary codes, there's various responsibilities and so on. But again, I use the phrase balanced and proportionate. I'm not a vindictive person. I genuinely don't think that's how we should approach this. A big mistake was made here. It was wrong. I don't think it was symptomatic of, or it was a systemic issue, to be fair. Many of our offices have been denuded. People have been working from home and so on.
There weren't any parties in the back garden or anything.
No, that culture is simply what was not there.
You've said on another issue, you've said, and you said it again yesterday, that more will be done, needs to be done to tackle violence against women. One practical measure that you could take is to provide additional funding for those fleeing domestic violence. There is a considerable shortage when it comes to refuge places. Will you do that?
Yes. But also we need to do more than that. I don't think funding will be the issue. And we will provide the funding. I think the fact that that the Department of Justice is going to lead on policy, but also on the wraparound services.
And when will that funding be provided? Because this has been a really big problem during the pandemic.
It has. Well, additional funding has been provided, but it seems to me that this area has been split between three departments. And on the accommodation side and the provision of refugee centres, for example, I'd like the system to be simpler in terms of the procurement of funding to build centres, for example. So you have to have an approved housing body at the moment to do it and so on. And I think that could be cumbersome. And I just would like a very straightforward, simple way of identifying need, having the requisite governance to oversee centres and so on. And then we're getting on with designing and building good quality centres. But in addition to that, then to provide a range of other supports for families in such situations, there's a requirement for capital funding, but there's also a requirement for ongoing current funding.
It's shocking, isn't it, that 9 out of the 26 counties have no refuge?
It is. And I wonder, my sense is that a lot of it has been from the ground up. So groups come to the centre, whereas it needs to be more centrally coordinated and more strongly coordinated to make sure that areas that don't have services are provided with services, and they will be a priority. You know, Roderick O'Gorman and Helen McEntee, both ministers, have been working together on this with Dara O'Brien. Agreement has been reached in terms of how this will get structured. It'll come to a cabinet subcommittee. It'll be to myself as Taoiseach to make sure that what's produced in the strategy that the minister will be publishing in early March on this gets delivered with timelines and with clear commitments fulfilled and realised. I can understand people's maybe cynicism, scepticism about whether this will be done or not. I can assure people it will be done. It will be followed through. The death of Aisling Murphy has shocked the nation. We saw that, I thought, in the Dáil yesterday, a very genuine cross-party. All parties, I think, are resolved to work together on this with the opposition and ourselves, and to create a cross-party mechanism to make sure that we can fulfil these timelines and we don't, that we're not kind of back in a year's time saying, why didn't this happen?
Róisín Shortall of the Social Democrats has questioned whether Leo Varadkar can take over as Taoiseach if he's still the subject of a Garda investigation. Does she have a point?
Again, I think we need to be careful of prejudging situations and outcomes. I mean, we would like that to be, I think Tánaiste himself would like that issue to be resolved once and for all. But, you know, my view is that that's, I'm not going to get involved or comment on that process itself. But, you know, I'm working well with the Tánaiste. I'm working well with Eamon Ryan. It's a government that...
Do you think it could cause difficulties, though?
Well, again, I don't, you know, I'm not going to anticipate anything around that. And in my view, you know, we have to observe due process and not prejudge situations or attempt to prejudge situations. I don't think that's fair either.
Taoiseach Micheál Martin, thank you for being with us on Morning Ireland.